Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. According to the Association of Oil and Pipelines, there are over 2.5 million miles of oil and gas pipelines in the United States. Some consider pipelines the safest way to transport oil and gas, while others object to new pipelines being built. Where do you stand on pipelines? Do you worry about them being near your waterways or homes? Or do you think pipelines are a better alternative to trains and trucks? Join us for our discussion about pipelines right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A Phillip, South Dakota man is being charged with disorderly conduct after an incident involving Native American children at a hockey game in January. Parents and students left the game early after some students were allegedly doused with beer. A complaint was filed against 41-year-old Trace O'Connell. The penalty includes 30 days in jail and a $500 fine. Charles Michael Ray reports that some of the parents in the case are angry over the outcome of the investigation.
Police officials had earlier indicated they would examine possible hate crime, child abuse, and assault charges in the incident. But prosecutors say, after a lengthy investigation, they can only charge what the evidence will bear. Patrick Duffy is an attorney for Trace O'Connell, who's accused in this case. Duffy says this issue was blown up in social media.
My client didn't say anything racist. We're going to find out when we go to trial what really happened. But my client and I apologize. Really, I apologize to the children of the Lakota Nation for how they have been made to feel about this. I look upon them with nothing but respect, as does my client, and he is really heartbroken over this.
The 88-page affidavit in the disorderly conduct case includes witnesses who say the kids were told to go back to the res. One of the two witnesses in the affidavit is Justin Poorbear. He's a parent who was also a chaperone at the game. Poorbear believes beer was deliberately poured on Native kids.
Today, it was heartbreaking, angry for the parents, all of us that were in attendance, because there was really no justice served for our kids.
Others, like Mato Standing High, an attorney for some of the families, believes the evidence in this case supports stronger charges.
And the message that's really being sent to the community of Rapid City is that, you know, in a situation like this, it's basically equivalent to a speeding ticket.
On Wednesday afternoon, a meeting between law enforcement officials and parents at the American Horse School reportedly grew very tense and then broke down. The police chief left that meeting early, citing safety concerns. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
A new study by the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice says Native Americans are at the highest risk of getting killed by police per capita in the state of California. And as Christina Onnested reports, the statistics nationally are not much different.
Native Americans between the ages of 25 and 29 are the highest risk of getting killed at the hands of law enforcement than any other racial demographic in California. They're 13 times more likely to be killed by police than whites and 3 times more likely to be killed by police than blacks per capita. Mike Males is a senior researcher for the Center on Juvenile and Criminal Justice in San Francisco. He says nationally, African and Native Americans have high rates.
The African Americans aged 20 to 24 are the most likely to be killed by police nationally, but right behind them are Native Americans aged 25 to 34 and 35 to 44.
Males says Native Americans are most at risk because the high rates of police killings are a national pattern for multiple age brackets over time.
Since these prevail year to year, and since they're also true nationwide, we're pretty sure this is a pattern that Native Americans are actually the most at risk.
Males used data from the Centers for Disease Control for national numbers and the California Center for Health Statistics for state rates of police killings. The study did not assess what contributes to the high rates of police killings of African and Native Americans. The study also found that rural areas in California have higher rates of police killings per capita than urban ones. Christina Onnested, California National Native News.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Supported by the Tribal Telecom and Technology Conference, Weaving Pathways Across the Digital Divide. The annual Tribal Telecom Golf Classic will be held May 4th, 2015 at the Isleta Eagle Golf Course. Info at tribaltelecomconference.com.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM Kawanak Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. It's been an active 2 weeks in the media for the oil and gas industry. Last week, Congress passed a bill approving the Keystone XL pipeline. President Obama is expected to veto the bill because the State Department hasn't yet finished reviewing the project. Also this Monday, a train carrying crude oil derailed in West Virginia, causing a massive explosion and evacuation of people living nearby. Today, we're going to focus in on pipelines and what they mean to the citizens of our tribal nations. And we want you to call in and tell us what you think about pipelines. Do you feel they are safe and a way to transport oil and gas? Or would you rather not see more pipelines being built? And do you have a pipeline in your community? What are your concerns? Maybe even celebrations. Our phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Minnesota is Winona LaDuke. She is the Executive Director of the Honor the Earth, and she is Anishinaabe. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Winona.
Thank you so much. Nice to be here.
And Winona, thank you for sharing your day with us. And we want to hear your thoughts on this. Tell us about some of the proposed pipelines other than Keystone XL that are of concern to you and others.
Yeah, so just to kind of give people a bit of a background, we are retooling North America's energy infrastructure is what's happening right now. You have the tar sands in northern Alberta, the Athabasca River Basin, that is landlocked. They got to find a way out. And so there's a set of proposals in Canada, the Gateway Pipeline, which is an Enbridge line, the Keystone XL Pipeline. These are Canadian corporations, Kinder Morgan. Those are West Coast pipelines, Kinder Morgan and the Gateway, then you have a Line 9, and then you have this Alberta Clipper. You have a whole set of pipelines that they're proposing for the Athabasca River tar sands, right? And they're kind of stuck. They're having some problems. They got a couple pipelines out, but they really need more to get their dirty oil to market. And so there's actually a mine that was closed down because they didn't have transmission yet. Then you have the fracking industry. Now, that's all a new industry, too. You got some fracking down in the Southwest going, but Colorado leading in fracking, and now the Bakken, which is up in North Dakota and Montana. And so they've got pipeline proposals coming out of that. And what I want to say is kind of we got to this place where we're a country which consumes too much energy. We're super inefficient. We decided to quit buying oil from countries overseas like Venezuela, which has the largest oil reserves in the world, and instead redo energy infrastructure in North America and put in a whole bunch of new pipelines and a whole bunch of new trains to carry this stuff around and cross in some pretty pristine areas. I live in northern Minnesota, and you know most people hear about the Keystone XL, which is 830,000 barrel per day pipeline. The pipeline that I'm facing four pipelines. Across the north, Anishinaabe, King, and the Alberta Clipper is 880,000 barrels per day of tar sands oil. They're trying to get through, and then got the Sandpiper, that's the main one, goes across my reservation, line three replacements, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I just want to say, Tara, that I'm not opposed to pipelines. I'm a first world person. You know, I live here in North America. I like pipelines. I like, you know, water mains. I like pipelines that carry sewage. I like infrastructure. I just don't happen to like dirty oil pipelines that are going to make a bigger mess of things. And that's what we're looking at.
And Winona, let me ask you this. Why haven't other pipelines created a stir like Keystone has? You know, maybe why not even what's going on in Wisconsin as well?
Well, the fact is that people focused on the Keystone because that was the first new, like, holy buckets. That's a big pipeline crossing the Oglala Aquifer, single source of water for all those people out there. We already had some pipelines in up here. I mean, the Leech Lake Reservation has 6 pipelines crossing it. Nobody really paid attention to pipelines historically. And then they started really ramping this stuff up. And now we've got, like, pipelines crossing all over. You know, in our case, if you just think where my territory is, Anishinaabe, Aking, we're the Great Lakes. And the object of the Enbridge Company's interest, because we're fighting the Enbridge Company as opposed to TransCanada, Enbridge has the Great Lakes pipelines, but they're trying to get that oil to Superior, because Superior is the most inland port in the United States. And so what they want to do is to get it to Superior and put it in some more pipelines across Wisconsin and essentially endanger Wisconsin. But besides that, we're going to be looking at tankers on Lake Superior. And if you have an oil spill on Lake Superior, it's going to take 100 years to clean that baby up because it's so big, so deep, and does not recharge its water.
All right, thanks for that, Winona. I also want to give out the phone number again if you'd like to join the conversation. Today, we are taking a look at pipelines and what they mean to our tribal communities. All opinions are welcome. Chime in on the conversation. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. What do you think about pipelines? Are there new ones that are being proposed to be built through your area? What's your stance on it? What about your tribe stance? Do you agree with them or do you disagree? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And Winona, your group does a really good job of explaining the different areas that are going to be impacted by proposed pipelines, some that are already there. Tell me more about what is at stake if more get built or if pipelines are starting to leak or bust in the area.
Well, without getting super geeky, which is my tendency, you got gathering lines, transmission lines, and distribution lines. The main things we're talking about here is these transmission lines, right? And these guys are these big pipelines that are getting 880,000 barrels per day, 830,000 barrels per day, you know, 700,000 barrels per day. That's a lot. You know, 760,000 barrels per day. That's what's trying to cross through the pristine ecosystem of northern Minnesota. And the thing is that those pipelines, it's called PSIs per minute. Like, it's about 1,000 PSIs, pounds per square inch. It's, like, so rapid and so much force going through that pipeline. They break, and, you know, the industry is saying it's a 99% safety rate. It turns out this recent report came out by Trudy Bell. She's a former editor of Scientific American. She's looking at data from PHMSA. That's a Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, PHMSA. PHMSA, I guess you call it. Quote from them, looking at their data, average pipeline, you got 170 to 250 incidents per year of spills in these pipelines in the nation. That's about half of what is observed. That's their statistic. The record shows that several per year are catastrophic. That one up in Yellowstone they just had, a couple at Fort Berthold. I think people kind of know what I'm talking about, Kalamazoo spill. Average pipeline, quote unquote, has a 57% probability of experiencing a major leak with consequences in the over $1 million range in a 10-year period.
And so that's coming from a scientific source is what you're reading.
Yeah, I'm reading, it's from the editor of Scientific American, reviewing data from the federal government. So what am I saying? You know, I'm like not a super geek on the pipelines, I'm getting to be, but that's a pretty high risk, 57% probability of experiencing a major leak with consequences over the $1 million range in a 10-year period.
And Winona, what does that make you feel, or how does that make you feel? I mean, and just taking in those numbers.
What anxiety. lot of anxiety. You know, it makes me feel like that I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for a bunch of new infrastructure that's going to put oil in my rice beds. You know, I didn't sign up. Like, I like to see the country has a D in infrastructure. The United States, first world country, has a D in infrastructure. We have bridges that crumble. In cities like Boston, they have like 3,000 leaks already in their gas mains. You know, they walked around with some little, I don't know what you call it, like a heat counter. You know what I'm saying? And the gas off leaking in our cities is horrible. Tribes don't have adequate infrastructure. No one's prepared for catastrophic spills.
Yep, there's a lot on the table. And Winona, I got a caller on the line, and I want to go ahead and bring them in. And, you know, we are asking, you know, what are you witnessing? We hear reports about how pipelines are affecting communities. We hear scientists going out there and giving us their take. We hear politicians, but we want to also hear from Native America. Have you gone out and walk the trail of where pipelines are? What are you witnessing? We want to hear. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. If you've also witnessed with your phone or camera and have photos, tweet it to us at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Hold tight, Winona. I want to take a caller. We got Troy in Farmington, New Mexico, tuned in. Hello, Troy. Welcome to the hour.
Hi.
Hello.
I was calling. I just heard everything. I love your radio station. Love it. It's the best. For
Thanks,
someone
Troy.
That's far away from home, I'm Oglala Lakota, and my job is I'm a boilermaker, and I built power plants, coal, oil refineries, everything. I do that. That's my line of work. The best way to move this oil is a pipeline.
And Troy, what are some of the reasons?
Your speaker that was on just a little bit ago was got so much percentage of this and that and millions of dollars. No. I got a lot of brothers that do pipelining. I'm a pipeliner. And the you got to look at it as a ratio. Look at in the past just 2 years, you had three train wrecks carrying oil all over back east, spilled everywhere. You do trains, trucks, it don't matter. The percentage is not no, it's like a 20% they're going to wreck.
All right, Troy. Hang tight. I want to give Winona a moment to also share her thoughts. Winona, anything you want to offer to Troy?
Yeah, you know, Troy, you know, hands up, handshake for pipeliners. I don't got a problem with pipelining. You know what I'm saying? This is like pipelines are good things. Just these ones is what my problem is. And the fact is that there are, yes, less spills in pipelines, in trains than in pipelines. But the thing is that the pipeline spills are much bigger spills. So, for instance, you had these train wrecks you're getting now. You know, it's not an either or. They're both a problem. You know, they're both a problem. And my thinking on this is that, you know, you had 800 spills in the Enbridge company in the past 10 years. You don't want to subject a set of wild rice, you know, lakes in northern Minnesota to a pipeline that does not benefit them. If it runs through our territory, you know, you get a little bit of property taxes from the company, but the fact is that the oil at the beginning and the end is still owned by some corporations. You know, I know we're in a fossil fuel economy, but the fact is that the choices we are making now are largely driven by, you know, industry, not by common sense. And so you got trains just derailing. We weren't ready for this. You know, I'm looking at this in Minnesota. I'm sitting right here in my I call this my hometown. I'm in Winona, Minnesota. And these guys got, they call them bomb trains all around them here. And, you know, they're pretty concerned about it after they seen that train, 14 cars just derail in West Virginia here a couple of days ago. It's a scary time, and I'm just saying we need a lot more common sense, and we don't need a lot more of this infrastructure. We need to take care of the infrastructure we got, make sure that none of the pipelines we got in are leaking, and not put in some new big risk pipelines, because these are mega pipelines. You know, 880,000 barrels per day, 20,000 gallons a minute is what it spills. 20,000 gallons a minute. That's a lot of oil.
All right. Winona, thank you. And Troy, thank you for your call there in Farmington, New Mexico. Again, phone lines are open. You're welcome to join us. All you have to do is call 1-800-996-2848. What do you think about what you're hearing? Is it an either-or situation when it comes to pipelines and trucks and rail? What do you think? Again, 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Winona, what happens when we do start seeing this as, okay, it's either going to be a pipeline or it's going to be truck or rail? What kind of situation does that put us in, especially being from indigenous nations? What do you think?
Well, many of us are prepared for any of it. I mean, the Lac-Mégantic, Quebec 2 years ago explosion, you know, vaporized 47 people. Bakken crude oil is highly volatile. It's like super volatile, more volatile than anything else, you know. So you get that stuff, and the fact is that the first responders in almost all cases are not the company. First responders are the local fire department or somebody who finds a spill. Kalamazoo spill was found by individuals, not by Enbridge. Companies, headquarters, they got this thing. It's really almost, I feel like almost like a comedy. It's called the Pipeline Inspection Gauge. Goes through every 5 years. Data is not present. Takes 9 months to analyze data. Pipeline Inspection Gauge, also known as PIG. A PIG. A PIG is what checks the pipeline. Pigs miss vertical cracks or longitudinal cracks. Pigs can't see that. Pigs can't get over. It's just crazy. Just crazy, all the stuff I know about pipelines now. This pipeline safety and security article I'm reading here, it's horrifying. You know, what I'm saying is, it's like, so I'm sitting here in Minnesota, and I feel like people in Minnesota have got their eyes closed and their hands over their ears going, God, we hope this works out. You know, they got four new pipeline proposals from the north and 375,000 rail cars of oil going across the state now. And, you know, we had a bridge collapse here a couple of years ago, and they're saying, we hope this works out. That's not how you make public policy. And tribal governments need pipeline ordinances. Pipelines, these companies are trying to abandon pipelines up here in the north. We don't have pipeline ordinances, so there's nothing that says a company can't just walk away from a pipeline.
And Winona, are there any tribes who are working on any of that you know of?
Treatment as state for water quality and ensure that anything that is proposed for their territory requires an environmental impact statement. And the tribes need to have a public utility commission to approve or disapprove any imminent domain across their territories by pipeline companies. That should not be the states. It should be tribes.
And Winona, are there any tribes talking about this right now?
You bet. We're talking about it in northern Minnesota. All of that. All of the above plus. Because we, you know, as is not surprising for tribes, we got broadsided by pipelines we didn't know about. Although the Enbridge company, largest pipeline company in North America, has an Aboriginal peoples and Native American policy, they didn't talk to us. In fact, in cross-examination, we asked them about their policy, and no senior project representative knew about their policy. So I was like, wow, really? Tribes are, you know, our tribes are all looking at this up north right now, and all our Ojibwe tribes in the north are very upset about these pipeline proposals.
All right. Thanks for that, Winona. And if there's anybody who would like to share more, call us right now, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Winona, also wanted to ask you, a lot of times when people take a look at the oil and gas industry, they say it all boils down to economics. What do you think about that, people say this is all about economics?
It's about bad math and bad economics. I'm an economist by training. You know, I went to Harvard and MIT. And you know what I'm going to tell you? Is it's like their economics is totally crazy. First of all, they're talking about in the Bakken oil field, the equivalent amount of oil in there is 1 year's consumption by the United States in the whole Bakken oil field. Now, they might be able to find some more if they drill down and explode the bedrock of the earth. Oh, but that's right. You know, fracking is where their big boom of the industry is coming from. And I think that you know, Tara, the fact is that fracking is exempt from major environmental laws, Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, you know, Safe Drinking Water Act. You know, all of the major environmental laws, fracking has an exemption for, which means all the liability is going to be placed on the Fort Berthold tribe when they are gone. The tribe is barely even regulating what's going on now. And if you're putting trillions of gallons of radioactive and highly toxic materials back into the earth in injection wells and you don't have to pay for it, well, that economics is pretty good because you don't have to pay for any of your damages, you know? So that's their math and their economics. And then there's the, you know, economics of all of their transmission. And then 10 years from now, when carbon crisis hits us, you know, I'm talking about with climate change, what we're going to have is the equivalent of $641 billion, $2.3 trillion in new pipeline infrastructure. That's what they're proposing to spend on pipelines in North America right now.
And Winona, I know that those numbers make a lot of people, you know, get them heated up. It also makes them nervous, too. And we do appreciate you sharing your observations and things that are coming from the work that's being done there at Honor the Earth. And finally, we got about a minute before break. Anything you want to leave us with about the impact on water?
Well, oil and water don't mix. You know, Honor the Earth and what I believe is, you know, our mantra is love, water, not oil. Turns out you can live without one, not the other. And, you know, I'd like to see a just transition, kind of a smooth transition to a reduced fossil fuels economy. Just a smooth one, not crash my way out with a bunch of oil contamination and climate change. You can do that. But look to our website, honortheearth.org. Information about pipelines, way more information than you probably want to know, but you know, stand together, stop these things, because they're just a really bad idea. You got to stop the black snake. That's what we call it, the black snake.
All right. Winona LaDuke, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling, Executive Director of Honor the Earth from the Anishinaabe Nation. We do appreciate you sharing your thoughts with us today here on Native America Calling. And now our phone lines are open. We're going to be presenting different views today. But go ahead, give us a call. Tell us what you think about what you heard. Are there things you agree with that Winona shared? Are there things that you want to challenge? Maybe you even have questions about how Native nations are being impacted by pipelines. We're going to have a full crew of people on the next block of our hour. You can ask those questions too. And again, today is your chance to tell us what you're seeing, what you're observing. How are people talking about pipelines in your tribal community? We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join our conversation today. You can also send us a tweet. We're on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and you can find us on Facebook, too. But we want to hear from you, Native America. Has your voice been left out of the process when it comes to agreeing on pipelines coming through your community? Are you in support, or maybe you are challenging this? Again, we want to hear from you. These are your phone lines. Use them today. Tell us what you're thinking. 1-800-996-2848, and we will be right back. Bipolar disorder affects 2.6 million adults, according to the National Institute of Mental Health. It can affect a person's relationships and ability to work. Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with bipolar disorder? What questions do you have about life after a bipolar diagnosis? Join us for the next Native America Calling.
This program supported by the Peace Corps, the government agency sending thousands of volunteers to live and work alongside people in more than 60 countries worldwide. The Peace Corps will allow you to share your unique cultural heritage and promote world peace and friendship. We have rewarding work opportunities around the world in education, health, agriculture, environment, and business. It will change your life and the lives of others. More information available at peacecorps.gov. That's peacecorps.gov. February is Children's Dental Health Month. Cavities can be prevented by brushing your kids' teeth daily and by limiting sugary snacks and sodas. Please make an appointment for your family today and visit the dentist regularly. A gentle reminder from Napper, Inc., a tax-exempt organization.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Mislata Pueblo, and thanks for joining us today. Native America Calling is carried on over 70 stations across the U.S., and we also stream online, and our distributor is Native Voice One. Those are a couple of places where you can find us. We are also talking about pipelines today, and we want to know what you think. Do you have a pipeline moving through your backyard? Are you concerned about the safety of pipelines, or would you rather have oil move through trucks and trains? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. All opinions are welcome. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And our guest today was Winona LaDuc. We had her on the line, but we are also going to be opening up the talking circle to other thoughts and opinions. And again, you're welcome to join us, 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and bring in another voice. Joining us from Denver, Colorado is Bill McCabe, and he is a principal of McCabe & Associates, which is a consulting business for tribal energy resource development and management. And Bill is Navajo. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Bill.
Oh, thank you very much.
And Bill, thank you for joining us today. Bill, I just want to give you a moment. Anything that you'd like to share? What do you think about what Winona shared?
Well, I'm very familiar with Winona and her stance on energy development. And we have to appreciate the Native side of the puzzle here. You know, I myself am I'm a petroleum engineer. I also graduated from named schools. You mentioned Harvard and MIT. I went to Stanford. So in that sense, too, it's great that we have higher educated people dealing with this matter. But I'm an oil and gas guy, and so I look at the other side of the puzzle here. I see that tribes hold about 5% of the oil reserves in the United States. I see that tribes hold about 10% of the natural gas reserves, 30% of the coal. If you want to take it a step further, 40% of the uranium. And these are actually old numbers. If you start building in the shale boom that we're currently experiencing right now, those numbers with the tribes may possibly go up. So let's just say tribes have, 10%, 10 to 15% of the fossil reserves, oil and gas reserves of the United States. So this, from there, they can derive an economy, a sustainable economy, a prosperous economy that can help the community further themselves with their quality of life. And so my position is, how do we develop these in a proper and prudent, responsible manner? And so as you develop these resources, you're going to need a marketing outlet. And the pipelines that we're discussing today provide that outlet. They're the conduit to the market. Let's take Fort Berthold, for example. I have worked with Three Affiliated. There's 1 million barrels of oil being produced from North Dakota. Now, up until 5 years ago, North Dakota's big hope for an economy was wind. And who would have ever thought that they would be the second largest state to produce oil in the United States? But all because of the technology, advances of technology in the oil industry. So now North Dakota produces 1 million barrels a day. And 300,000 of that comes off of the Fort Berthold Indian Reservation. So the tribe actually has an opportunity to improve itself through energy economics. But in order to do so, it has to take this product to market. There is a constraint presently in the Bakken where there is a discount to the price index, and they use West Texas Intermediate as a price index. There's a discount for Bakken oil because two factors. Primarily, the transportation constraint, you know, not enough pipeline transportation, not enough train, rail, and other means of transporting the oil from the fields there. But also there is a quality of oil issue. But primarily it is a transportation issue. And that discount is up to $20 a barrel, anywhere from $10 to $19 a barrel. So the tribe is actually suffering as a result of this constraint. So then, you know, you look at, well, then why would we not then encourage the development of pipelines so that we can actually get the true full value of our product?
All right. And Bill, I want to put a pause real quick on that. It's interesting to hear how the numbers break down from your perspective and, you know, just sharing how some of this plays out and maybe even some of the reasons why tribes might be pushing for pipelines. We're going to get more into that. I want to take a caller, though. We got Lori on the line again. If you want to join us, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. Let's hear from Lori. She is in Anchorage, Alaska, tuned in on KUNM. Lori, welcome to the hour. Actually, go ahead, Lori.
Yes, hi. Yes, and I'm listening to KNBA.
Okay, thanks
here.
For that.
No big deal. But I just want to say, I mean, I think that the two opinions are interesting. I follow Winona. I applaud her for what she's doing. Fracking is the worst possible way to get oil out of the earth, and it needs to be highly regulated. For almost 10 years, I worked on the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and for whatever reason, this pipeline that was built in the 70s has had a remarkable ability to not spill, not create environmental hazards and things. And basically what it is it does come down to economics. It's a consortium of oil companies who are drilling on the North Slope, and they formed a nonprofit. Alaska Pipeline runs the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and it is a giant nonprofit that works to make sure that the pipeline's integrity is maintained and that oil flows. And the problem is in the lower 48, and Winona touched on that, was that there is not a regulatory structure in place. They're not subject to the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, those types of things. The pipeline in Alaska is so highly regulated that one teaspoon of oil has to be reported. The regulators are in there, you know, immediately when something like that happens. And rather than this Congress, the first thing they do is pass the Keystone Pipeline. The first thing they need to do is get a regulatory and oversight structure in place to make sure that these pipelines are safe if they're going to build them. And I don't advocate that, but I'm saying that it can be done responsibly, like the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
All right, Lori, thank you for your call. And earlier mentioned, what about tribes getting in on the regulation side? What do you think about that? Do you think tribes need to be taking a look at this and maybe even putting things on the books? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Lori, thank you for your call there in Anchorage. Let's go ahead and bring in another voice. We got Colton in Fort Berthold, North Dakota, tuned in on KMHA. Colton, what are you thinking?
Good morning. I just want to say that in regards to pipelines, that's a bigger issue overall related to the petroleum industry. And, of course, here Fort Berthold, everybody likes to use this as an example, and they want to spout off numbers and talk about the benefits and the long-term economics of it. We're already seeing the shortfall of that, and it's already affected our budget. And this is, you know, one of the places they like to use this thing being one of the most profitable as far as that goes. So that's not really a valid point from what I can tell. And the quality of life is, I think, what concerns a lot more people when it comes down to the production as a whole, and that's dropped. So you could say all you want about numbers going up, how much money's coming in. It's what about the chemicals and the riffraff that comes along with it? And I think it's about time that Fort Berthold, as an agricultural tribe, not an energy tribe, explores more things that are renewable, like clean energy, and probably hemp along with it too. So.
All right. Thank you for your call, Colton, there in Fort Berthold, North Dakota. And again, we want to hear from you, 1-800-996-2848. 2848 is the number. And what about the economics of this? What do you think? You've heard kind of two sides to the topic. Where do you stand on this? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. Let's bring in another. We got David, who is in Point Arena, California, tuned in on KGUA. David, welcome to the hour. And what would you like to add?
Just a couple things. One, I'm here in Mendocino County, and fortunately, this county has voted to never allow any fracking. So that's a good thing here. It's too bad more of the country didn't know what it could turn into in the beginning. My primary question is regarding the Keystone. I remember months ago when I was listening to a program, I believe it was NPR, on another channel, but there was a conversation regarding the Keystone, and something that was mentioned then that I just have not heard much about since was that the tar sands up in Canada, the oil that is being produced and the reason for the pipeline to get it down into the U.S. where it's going to be processed. Anyway, it was brought out in that program that the oil was ultimately headed for China. Since that time, what I hear on the news, that the media spin seems to be more and more how important oil is for the U.S. economy. But if all of this that's being produced in Canada and the reason for the pipeline is to get it into the U.S. so it can be processed, but it's ultimately going to China, I don't understand how that's
sure, David. Long-term. I hear how the two are contradicting. And, you know, we're also hearing a lot about this as people take a look at why gas prices are low. Bill, can you make any sense of this for us?
Well, it does come down to economics in the industry. And while I am a very strong proponent of energy resource development on tribal lands, I am also in total agreement with not only our callers, but our first presenter, Winona, in that tribes need to have a more regulatory oversight and ability with what goes on their lands. And that's what my company does when I work with tribes. Not only do we have the technology, provide technology to assist tribes with the development, but also to put together a strategic resource development plan so that the tribe does eventually and ultimately have regulatory oversight. This should be mandatory on tribal lands. You know, the government through their trust responsibility should be providing this for us. And as we see on a nation overall, that hasn't been the case. So tribes need to be taking this into their own hands. It's going to take some background. It's going to take some experience. It's going to take some training. But it can be done, and in doing so, it provides employment for tribes on the reservation.
And Bill, let me ask you this. You know, if tribes, you know, get to that point, or we see more tribes who are putting things on the books, what about holding some of these companies accountable when there are spills, especially when it comes to cleanups? Are you also saying this is a part of the process, or is that a whole another conversation we need to also be seeing on the tribal level?
That is part of the process. You know, prior to 1982, tribes did not have the ability to negotiate the land use, you know, the resource development. The Bureau of Indian Affairs did that on our behalf. So all of these things, all these mechanisms, all this infrastructure was in place, you know, prior to us having the Indian Minerals Development Act, allowing us to participate in the development of our resources. So now we've inherited, well, I guess what we can call this mess, and now we're trying to build the ability to deal with it. And we have the capability now, and as Winona mentioned, you know, we're educated now. We have more and more kids going to school. We have more and more engineers, business people, scientists, geologists, all which are capable of putting together the capacity for tribes to deal with this, not only the development, but the responsibility of the outcome of that development.
All right. Thanks, Bill. Got another caller we're bringing in. Again, join us. 1-800-99-NATIVE is our number. Let's go ahead and go to Arizona. We have Colleen driving there in the state, tuned in on KGHR. Colleen, what do you think?
Hello, Yat Ed. This is Colleen. I just wanted to comment on the pipeline and how it impacts or could impact Native communities. I wanted to bring it back to a proposed pipeline occurring in the New Mexico area on the Eastern Agency of the Navajo Nation. This is going to be a 130 or 140 crude oil pipeline, and the BLM is required to go through, an EPA NEPA process, and they're trying to kind of just do a small environmental assessment instead of a full environmental impact statement, which can look at more of the impacts in that area regarding this pipeline project. So, what the organization I work with and talking to some of the Diné community members and people out there, they don't want the pipeline. You know, it's going to impact them, and the jobs are short term, and the revenue, we don't know where it's going to go. Our tribal leaders are not really involved. They're probably not really aware of this project because it's pretty complex, too. It's a checkerboard area. So it's on BLM lands, the whole oil and gas industry in that area, in the fracking and oil and gas drilling. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that might be the issue, or they're just, kind of not aware of it right now about this big project. So, there's a lot of different factors that goes into this proposed pipeline. It can decrease the traffic, but basically where our resources are getting extracted and it's going out of state, we don't know where it's going to go. It's going to benefit other people. So,
and Colleen, what is the organization you work with?
I work with Diné Care, Diné Citizens Against Ruining Our Environment.
All right. And is there any contacts you want to put out if folks want to connect with you?
We have a Facebook. Just look up Diné Care. And then we also have a website, www.diné/care.org. We're trying to just put information out there and do some outreach on this proposed pipeline and some of the impacts that it could have on the people, on the environment, and on the land and the air as well, because there's a big fracking boom occurring on that side of the reservation right now.
All right, Colleen, thank you for your call. And again, if you are working on issues connected to oil and gas in Native America, feel free to send us a tweet. I know a lot of people want to learn more about this topic. You can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. And if there's more you'd like to share with us, you can send us an email. Send it to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. I want to bring in one more voice joining us now from Lake Andy, South Dakota. It's Faith Spotted Eagle, and she is the coordinator of the Brave Heart Society and chair of the Ihunktua Treaty Committee, and she is coming to us from the Ihunktua Nation. Welcome back, Faith.
Thank you. Many thanks for having me on.
And Faith, we have gone through this and have heard different views. Anything you want to add about what the impact of pipelines mean for tribal nations?
Sure. I think that trying to summarize what I feel about the conversation that has taken place this past hour is that I think that, first of all, I put my hands up to the Native people that are engineers and technical people that have voiced their opinions on the program. I want to mention that I am on the Council of Elders for the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. And the reason that ACES has done that is because they try to keep balanced from scientific Western knowledge and keep it in balance with indigenous views of the environment. And so I'm well aware that sometimes if we don't do that, the scientific Western side tends to outweigh our beliefs. And I think our Uncle Vine Deloria said it the best. And he always said that the primary difference between Western and indigenous ways of life is that Indians experience and relate to a living universe, whereas the Western people reduce all things living or not to objects, which is essentially what the FEIS did. If you look at the final environmental impact statement, it's very ulterior, and that in itself leads to our feeling and our observation and our direct experience that what is happening is outright economic violence, if I could add the word violence to economic, and human rights violations. And the other thing is there's a word that is coined as NIMBY, not in my backyard. In the FEIS, it states that that is an example of economic violence. There is going to be no economic benefits that substantially outweigh the detractors to Indian country. There are supposedly 1,900 employees to be filled by transient out-of-area persons, which will increase crimes. We do not, as I believe Bill had said, that the trust responsibility that we came from the direct result of signing treaties is to ensure when our grandfathers signed those for us to be protected. That trust responsibility is lacking because faith consultation has not occurred. Yet in the Supremacy Clause of the U.S. Constitution, it says that treaties are the supreme law of the land. In subsequent court cases that have come about, they talk about that these treaties need to be interpreted as the Indians understood them.
And Faith, I also wanted to ask you, you know, when we do take a look at, you know, the way treaties, you know, were set up to protect our communities or agreements between us and the government, any thoughts about how we pass on as much knowledge as we can to future generations? Because, you know, as we take a look at this, we're dealing with it right now, but it is, you know, as many of us are taught, this is for future generations, what they're going to have to deal with. Any thoughts on how we prepare the next generation to have open minds and think about this in a good way? Faith?
Absolutely. I think it's very, very important, and I'm going to throw my hands up to a book that's out there. It's called Pagans in the Promised Land, and it's by Stephen Newcomb. And what he says is that how we assert our sovereignty is how we behave and how we act and how we voice it. And how we voice it is, like right now, what I'm saying is that this is an infiltration into 1851 and 1868 treaty lands. It is an absolute violation of a unilateral agreement that was signed between two sovereigns. And so we can use all the engineering speak in the world to justify it, but it's a case of economic violence where our water has been taken. As we speak, the winner's right doctrine is being violated. We are senior water users based on the winner's doctrine, which came out of Montana. So, you know, I could quote all day long, but bottom line, I think this economic violence is also affecting our relatives, the animals, because we talk about how the endangered species. In our language, Mamakashka is I am wholly moving, which is how we describe animals. And there's a minimization of the endangered species that will be affected. We do not have the right to regulate ecosystems by men who want this project for economic purposes on species that have been in existence for thousands of years. We do not know the downstream effect of what will affect the environment. And we're seeing the direct effect of that with bees. If the bees are gone, we're not going to be able to live because that pollination is not going to occur.
All right. Faith, thank you for joining us today here on Native America Calling. And I want to go ahead and turn it back to Bill, who's joining us. He is the principal of McCabe & Associates, which is a consulting business for tribal energy and resource development and management. And Bill, we've heard many different views today. I'd also like to hear your take as well about, you know, preparing our next generations to, you know, continue to make decisions on oil and gas, pipelines, and I guess our environment too. Go ahead, Bill.
Well, thank you. And again, my plot to ACES. I've been a long-standing member of ACES, both in college and as a professional member, American Indian Science and Engineering Society. And to your question, I think it will take an organization such as ACES to develop the capability among our people so that we can take the responsibility of the development of our resources, energy, and otherwise. It falls on us, you know, the technical, the financial, the environmental, but more so the cultural responsibility will fall on us and is up to our tribal leaders to take that responsibility and ingrain that in our communities as we move forward with or without the development. You know, it is up to our leaders, ultimately. We want to be there to help them make that decision.
All right. And Bill, any advice to our listening audience if they feel their tribe needs to get talking more about this, or they want to see their tribal leaders put in more regulations on any of this? Any advice you have for the citizens, how they can speak up?
Well, there are many folks and organizations there that the tribes can go to. Again, I've been doing this on an individual consulting basis for most of my career, for 20 years. I feel the it's necessary to have this capability at the hands of tribal leadership. So there's many sources out there. The leaders can easily go and extract those sources. And, of course, I'm available at any time. I'm sure Winona is as well. And Faith is a part of this as well.
All right. And Bill, is there anything coming up in the future that we should have our eyes on when it comes to more decisions on pipelines?
Oh, my goodness. Well, again, that's our neural network for energy transportation, and it's going to happen. You know, the United States is built on that neural network, oil, gas. You know, it's like the aortas, the veins, and the capillaries. Winona touched on that. You get the large transmission lines, the laterals, all the way down to the gathering systems. And then the pipes that run into your house that provide natural gas for your water heater. You know, this all relies on pipelines. So what we do need to do is make sure that these are safe conduits. The tribes have their role in it. The United States has their role in it. States have their role in it. Perhaps we can set the example on our own lands on how this could be administered.
All right. Bill McCabe, thank you for joining us. Also want to thank our guests, Winona LaDuke and Faith Spotted Eagle, for sharing their thoughts on this. We know there is plenty more to say on this. Again, send us an email if there's something you're still thinking. comments@nativeamericacalling.com. You can also visit our website, nativeamericacalling.com, and you can comment on today's show right there on the webpage. Thanks to our crew here, our senior producer, Monica Brain, our associate producer, Andy Murphy, and Stephen Emmons, our engineer. Also, thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, anchor and producer of National Native News. And also, while you're at it, check out their website. It's got a new face, and check it out, nationalnativenews.net. I'm Tara Gatewood, your host and producer. It's been a pleasure to hear more from Native America. We are eager for tomorrow because we're going to hear from you again. Have a wonderful afternoon, and we'll be back tomorrow.
When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support Native America Calling. Just use Pick, Click, Give, and select KNBA-FM, Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska.
February is Children's Dental Health Month. Cavities can be prevented by brushing your kids' teeth daily and by limiting sugary snacks and sodas. Please make an appointment for your family today and visit the dentist regularly. A gentle reminder from Napper Inc., a tax-exempt organization.
Go tell your daddy, go tell your mommy, go tell your honey not to worry. No, don't be scared, oh yes, I swear, because we have affordable care.
Getting insured is easy. Call 1-800-318-2596 or visit healthcare.gov/tribal. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Oh-ho!
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.